Why Has America Stopped Inventing? That's the provocative title of a book by Darren Gibby. Gibby's a patent lawyer and points out that Americans invent less than half of what we did a century ago. Half. Why? Are we less creative than we were 100 years ago? Gibby says the problem lies in one place and one place only. The U.S. patent system. He tells N. Strange Champs the current system has got to go.
Well, the thing that was really frustrating to me was I'd see these inventors come into my office really exuberant, have some great ideas, and I was the one that was breaking the bad news to them to say, hey, look, you have a good idea, but in order for you to protect your idea, it's going to cost you around $30,000 to get your patent. It will take you about 5 years to work its way through the patent office. And then even worse, once you do get your patent, if anybody tries to copy your design and you need to bring a patent infringement suit, it's going to cost you $2 to $5 million to be able to stop them. Now, the ordinary American, these numbers are so large, it's impossible for anybody to do that. And without that kind of protection, there's really no way that they can come up with an invention and be able to successfully market it.
At this point, your poor inventor who walked in with his brilliant ideas scribbled on a napkin must be wondering how anyone ever built or made anything new or original in America. I mean, how did we get here? Have patents always been this hard to come by?
Well, that's a great question. And the answer is no. It used to be relatively easy to get a patent. Back in 1836, they built a new patent office. They got a new patent commissioner whose name was Henry Ellsworth. His father was actually one of the Supreme Court justices, and they wanted to be able to come up with a system where the average American could quickly get a patent and be able to enforce it. And so the cost to get a patent in 1836 was about $30 to $40, and it took around 3 months. And then once you wanted to enforce your patent, the most expensive case back in the 1850s was handled by Daniel Webster while he was Secretary of State, handled the Goodyear rubber case, and he charged $10,000. People thought that was so outrageous that he could do that. But you look at how much it was then versus now, it almost seems trivial. And when you look at the numbers, back in the 1830s through the 1850s, America invented twice what it does now. I mean, that's a shocking statistic. We invented twice what we did now.
You make the comment in the book, you say that for these early inventors, inventing was their religion, meaning, you know, it wasn't just a hobby, it was an actual obsession. But I hear you sort of suggesting that inventing was a religion for America, too, that it was really a central part of the country's identity.
I really think it was. And if you look at the mid-19th century, everybody loved to invent. Everybody wanted a piece of the action. One of my favorite stories is with the Reaper case. Once they had invented the Reaper and it was out and all the farmers were using it, they would tinker with it all season long because it wasn't perfect. And what they would do is at the end of the season, they would take their ideas and they'd all file for patent applications. And McCormick was a genius at marketing. He'd lost his patent case, but he learned that the whole United States is my R&D department. So he would send out these patent scouts from his company at the end of each season. He would find the best inventions. He would buy them up. And then over the winter, he would incorporate them into his new model so that in the spring, he'd have a whole new line of Reapers. But the great part about this is the inventors were not part of his company. They were just average Americans doing what they do, which is inventing.
That makes me think of, there's a phrase I've heard, a patent troll.
Yeah, patent trolls are a real problem today. And what a patent troll is it's somebody who really doesn't have a business behind their company. They just go out and they buy up patents or they'll file for their own patents really without an idea. They'll just kind of put on paper some harebrained idea, work its way through the patent office, and then try to claim that it covers something that it doesn't. And most of these patent trolls today claim that they have patents that cover almost any kind of way to do business over the internet. And when you read these patents, you cannot understand what they're saying. But how these people operate is they know that it costs $2 to $5 million to defend against a lawsuit. So they'll sue hundreds of people at a time. They'll say, our patent covers your way of selling goods over the internet. And if you pay me, say, $50,000, we'll just settle the case right now. But if you don't settle, we're going to take you to trial and you're going to spend $2 to $5 million. And so most companies, they're held highway robbers. That's why they're called trolls. because it's cheaper to pay this guy $50,000 than to hire a law firm and spend $2 to $5 million.
You know, a lot of the stories you told from the early days of American invention, the Golden Age, are stories of individual guys who, on their own, with no particular equipment or giant lab or company behind them, just tinkered and worked until they came up with something. Charles Goodyear, Henry Ford, the Wright brothers, they didn't have big corporations behind them. But the picture I'm getting is that today, you can't come up with a new invention or successfully defend it unless you've got the strength and the big pockets of a major corporation behind you.
Well, that's right. And there's two issues there. Is one, can you invent without a big corporation? And the second question is, do you need a big corporation to be able to move this through the patent system? And in answer to the first question, I think people can invent even without a big lab behind them. And a great example I saw in the New York Times a couple weeks ago was this woman who, while in high school, was at a VA hospital and saw this issue of referred pain with amputees from the war. And so she came up with this idea of being able to heat the limb when they had this referred pain so that it would get rid of it. And what she did is she wrote to a bunch of engineering universities and asked for help with her idea. And there was a number of them who were willing to help her out. And so now she's got this little company. She's going to go to law school. She knows nothing about technology, but she came up with the idea. Where we're really falling short is now we have these ideas. We need to protect them. We need to be able to move them on to where they can be brought into products. And that's really where our patent system has failed us.
Without getting too technical, can the system be fixed?
Oh, I think it can. And I think all that we have to do is go back to 1836 and the Patent Act that we had there, where it was so simple to get a patent application through the patent office and so simple to enforce it. What we've done in the 150 years since then, ironically, is that we've layered on doctrine after doctrine in an effort to make the system more fair. And while it may be somewhat more fair, it's just taken it out of the range of the ordinary inventor. So let's go back 150 years ago to what we had, what worked, and I think you would see the same groundswell of invention that you did back then.
Darren Gibbey's the author of Why Has America Stopped Inventing? Anne Strangechance spoke with him.